On Deck Radio, wall-to-wall baseball talk. With Pete Wagner and former Twins Gene Larkin and Al Newman.
The Twins are going to win the World Series. The Twins have won it.
Covering the diamond like the world's biggest rain tarp, Pete Wagner and former Twins Gene Larkin and Al Newman. On Deck Radio with 105 The Ticket.
High to center field and back. Horn going back. Still going back. It's off the wall. Hunter rounds first. There's nobody at second base. And the throw lobbed back to the infield. Laces it to center field. Deep to left. You take one under the chin.
I was just going to say, that makes Torrey
That's what
so
you want to do.
Torrey really doesn't like that. And what a professional job there. Didn't say anything. Got back in the box. Looked for a fastball. Got it. And hammered it.
To the gap in left center field.
Run like mad, Torrey.
It one hops the wall. Hunter will go to second. It'll be just a double, but it's just clear at the bases.
Did you hear the ho-hum attitude of Dick Bramer? He was like, oh, another day at the office. David Helmer behind the deal. You're laughing. You caught that, too.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I even got some extra fun clips.
Do it again.
Hi.
What is
well,
that?
You know, Wags, that when your team doesn't do well, he's had a miserable 4 years, obviously, watching a team play, and it gets old in a hurry. Now he's a little bit of excitement, and, you know, you gotta say those guys are enjoying themselves in the last few weeks.
You
no
know,
question.
Truth be told, you are 100% correct, and I don't know how you can get up every day and just watch the ball get booted around like it's on the pitch, and then you know, wish for a 10-year-old baseball game which would have more strikes. But it's been this team is 12-5 at home, 8-3 in their last home stand, their longest of the year.
They've been fun to watch. It's been phenomenal.
What's been key for your enjoyment that's different this year than others?
Well, they're playing the game with a lot more confidence. Let's take away the first week of the season because that was a joke. And everybody said, oh, here we go again. And we really didn't give them enough time to operate under this Paul Molitor system. And they've been great. I mean, you can look at it a few different ways. We talked about this before we got on the air, Pete. Number one, they're playing very, very well. They're hitting the ball very, very, scoring a lot of runs, obviously, and taking some pressure off their pitching staff. But you got to look at it from maybe a good faith look at it. Who are they playing during this 10-year of great baseball, playing teams that they should be beating? The White Sox have been playing very poorly. Cleveland's been playing very, very. Oakland, look at their record. They're in almost last place in their division. So
maybe they're there because they're the Twins put them there.
They're beating the teams they should be beating now. You know, it's always good to run into teams when they're not playing very, very well. Teams have done that to the Twins the last 4 years, no question. But on the positive side, they have turned the corner a little bit. They're playing a lot more confident. And they're getting big hits. And obviously, Torrey Hunter, starting May 1st, has been a great, great hitter.
Well, and he's been a great addition in so many other capacities, too, as well. So, Al Newman can't be with us today.
Oh.
What's happening?
Jeez.
I mean, is he one of these guys who comes on strong and then just disappears? Is that what I'm sensing?
He's pinch hitting for the Saints right now.
Absolutely. All the credit to him. I just had to take a little bit of a shot because I know he can't hear us right now because he's knee-deep in fungos. So the Saints have this, like, spring training, which is really like a weekend worth of work, I think.
No, I think they had tryouts too, open tryouts,
like all of that.
Right,
yeah,
right, right.
And then they sort
they
of shape
to get the
their
diamond
roster
in the rough.
Absolutely, Tom Whaley now running the show there, and from the general manager perspective, I believe, or VP, whatever the title is, you see his name bouncing around quite a bit. But so George Samus is getting some help from Al Newman today, so he'll be back.
It's a very good fungo, by the way.
Does he really?
A lost art.
Is he
okay?
A Twilliger guy?
A lost art. Yes, very good.
How are you with it?
I don't want to say anything, but I'm pretty darn good.
Are you?
Yes.
So you can put it two steps to the right, two steps to the left?
I can hit a good fly ball, too. You know, that's the whole. I see a lot of guys hitting good ground balls off the fungo, but it's a lost art trying to hit a proper fungo to the outfield, let me tell you.
And when we're talking fungos, we're talking the actual fungo. We're
correct.
Not talking grabbing some guy's bat out of the bag.
Yeah.
No.
We got the regular big league fungo out there, and if you want to come to a nice pregame, come to the Edina Legion.
Okay, so
I love to hit the fungo.
walk me through it. Do you have two guys going at once?
Sure.
Real organized? Do you have a big league warm-up?
Well, I wouldn't say it's a big league warm-up.
Yeah, because they got to catch a ball, right? Al is working his best impression on that right now. Man, there's been so much to talk about when it comes to this Twins team. And, you know, it starts from personnel and pitching and, you know, attitude. And I think really this first part of this segment we want to talk about is what you brought up, Gene, is the actual tone this team is bringing to the table each and every day and the confidence that you feel they're gaining. I think the thing that was most difficult to watch were in the past wasted at bats, really rough fielding decisions, throwing balls to bags. You have no idea where it's going. How is that permittable at the major league level? We're not seeing wasted at bats and those types of defensive decisions right now.
After the first week of the season, I keep bringing this up. It's a totally different mindset that the players are having, and physically they're doing the job. Week of the season, is we're not catching the ball. We're not just talking about routine ground balls. We're talking about routine fly balls, which where is that
popping
coming
out of
from?
Gloves?
Exactly. After a spring training that was dominated by, we're going to preach the fundamentals. We've got to catch the ball. We're not good enough not to catch the ball. Well, the first week of the season, that's what they did. They were not catching the ball very well. And, their pitching staff's been maligned forever. They're starting to get some stability. They've had bad breaks with Nolasco and then Santana, which we've talked about in previous weeks, but that's starting to become stabilized a little bit more. Pitchers getting deeper into games. The relief pitch is more of a role situation. Who's coming in the sixth? You know, Paul Mahler is making the advancement now that Perkins can come in the eighth inning for an out, which I love. I never could understand why it's closed. We have to come in bases empty just to get these three big outs. Well, what about in the eighth inning? The biggest out of the game might be the last out in the eighth inning. Why don't you have your best guy out there? So that was a pet peeve of mine. I'm glad he took that upon himself to, put Perkins in there, and he's done a nice job. Everything is right now is flowing very well, and the team is having a lot of fun, and the fans are watching them have a lot of fun.
By the way, if you want to give us a shout, 651-989-9105. If you want to talk Twins baseball, that number again, 651-989-9105. And the bullpen usage will be a little more in-depth in our five-question segment at the bottom of the hour. I'm looking forward to getting your opinion.
Preview. I like the preview.
Oh, absolutely. Mike Berardino joining us. Teases, as we call him. Mike Berardino joins us. He from the Pioneer Press, TwinCities.com. He'll be checking in with us at 11:15, and then we'll be closing it out with a little look ahead for the Twins week ahead, and we'll continue through with this discussion right now. Now they go into Cleveland in the month of May. They've scored 56 runs, which is the most by far in Major League Baseball. So the bats are coming together, and it's interesting when you look at these bats and what they are and who they are. Not exactly household names, however, this is a group that was by and large the highest scoring team from August 1st to the end of the year last year, and then again seventh best in the big leagues all of last year. So we've always said we know the bats. Why though is it this organization is hitting the ball so well? Is this an organizational thing, talent, coaching, all of the above?
Well, I think it starts in the top of the order too. I mean, Dozier's hitting the ball a little better. I mean, I give a lot of credit to the turnaround to Trevor Plouffe as well. If you remember a few weeks back, he got some big hits. Power numbers came back a little bit. And I really respect Trevor Plouffe, because the last 3 years he's heard Miguel Sano, I mean, to nausea, right?
We absolutely
all heard. And he could have said, oh my God, I'm gonna lose my job in the next 2 weeks if I don't perform well. He's a very laid back guy off the field, you could tell, but on the field he's got an inner intensity to him and a lot of pride. Obviously he's improved his defense and his power numbers. He's probably the best power hitter the Twins got right now from the right side. So I give him a lot of credit for the turnaround a few weeks ago too. But guys are getting on base. Joe Mauer's doing his thing, hitting the ball over the field. Still not hitting a lot of power, but doing his thing. And Vargas is taking better at bats. I've talked about him a little bit in the first few weeks of this show, that I was really looking forward to seeing him turn the corner this year as far as the big power guy from both sides of the plate. Started off real slow. The pitchers expanded the strikes on him. He didn't swing in a lot of strikes. He's starting to get back a little bit. Had a few days off last week. Since those days off, he's gotten back into a better rhythm as a hitter, driving the ball a little bit more. So from top to bottom, all their guys are doing. Suzuki's doing a nice job now. He got off to a rough start. And we talked about Torii Hunter earlier. He had a terrible April. I don't know what it was that he felt pressure that he was going to be the new guy back now. Everybody's show that he's the leader both in the clubhouse and on the field. And he had a miserable April. And it really doesn't matter how much ten you have in the big leagues. When you come back and there's a lot of pride at stake now, you came back for a reason to turn this team around. And I think in May, he just said, let's go back to
the game. He looked pretty free swinging yesterday, didn't he?
He's having a lot more fun, and he brings more energy to the team than we've seen in the past, so it's been nice to see.
Have you ever seen a man who's about, what, 6'7 and 295 pounds? Have you ever seen him slide head first into third base? Have you ever seen that?
No.
He did that, Vargas.
I know.
I absolutely.
He's not the best base runner in the world.
I pronounced that was not an earthquake. That was actually Kenny's Vargas. He dove head first. Honestly, when he left his feet and he was in air, I mean, it wasn't very high. I mean, it was almost like a tree tipping over, you know? So there wasn't like really a launch point. But the point was, one, he did it.
Yeah.
I appreciated it.
Right.
He got dirty and, you know, he was playing hard. But most importantly, I can't believe that he just didn't stop because it was raining. I can't believe it didn't just stop him dead. He made it to the bag. But, you know, I mean, that's a dumb little thing that I made a note of, though. I loved it. That he doesn't maybe view himself that way and that he went after it. That was great.
And, you know, you can criticize it, obviously, but he's an aggressive guy. And Mala has preached that. He wants the guys to be intellectually aggressive, I kind of the term you used. I mean, be smart on the base pass, know what the opportunity that arises. And, you know, maybe he overstepped his bounds and looked a little ridiculous.
Oh, it was wonderful.
But, you know, I got to appreciate it as well.
So it seems like he's willing for them to, well, when you take chances on the base paths intellectually, you're also going to open yourself up to, you know, being thrown out here or there. Right. But for Molitor, that doesn't seem like that's a big issue.
Well, I think it's going to be a big issue if it happens over and over again. You've got to pick your spots about being aggressive on the bases. I mean, everybody knows, you know, you got to know the situation. You got to know who the outfielders are, whether you're winning or losing the game, the inning of the game. So, you know, they're learning. The younger guys are learning. And it's been well documented. Paul's a very good instructor, very good teacher regarding the fundamentals of the game and trying to use a little bit more instinct on the bases and picking your spots. So it's funny when you got a 290-pound guy trying to pick his spots and using his instinct and it didn't work out.
No, classic. So when the when you look at the home record at 12-5,
yeah.
Last, you know, I believe they led the league in 2010 with the best home record when Target Field opened, and then there were the four years, and it was almost. It was almost like a man. Are we glad to come here to pound on this team? And they have to collectively have the worst home record, maybe next to Houston, during that time period. And now it's a lot different. From a player's perspective, being at home, being in the clubhouse, if things are grooving for you, is it a lot easier to be here and want to be at that park?
Sure, nobody wants to get booed in your home park, and they played so poorly at home with a bad record that they knew they weren't going to get very good, you know, fan reaction to their play on the field. But it always, you know, we talk about this all the time, Wags, that it always starts with the guys in the starting rotation, the five guys. If they go out and be consistent, your home record's going to be very, very good. I mean, the Twins fans have been terrific. They've put up with a lot of nonsense over the last 4 years, and they still come out to watch the team play. And it's nice now that they have somebody or some team to come in and root for and have a passion for and get it back. Now, it's a small 30 games. It's a small period of time. But for me, as a former player, I see a different tone being set this year. The guys are enjoying themselves a little bit more, better at bats, more stable pitching staff, even like I mentioned in the Lasco and Santana unfortunate incidents. So I think things going forward, are they going to maintain their pace? Probably not. They're not over the hump yet. But it's a grind, like I say all the time. It's 162 games, and let's take these last 2 weeks of great baseball against teams they should beat and say this is a positive. This is what we should be doing to building a more competitive, consistent team.
Well, and to that point, the things that I think about is that Phil Hughes start back last Monday. I wrote a bit on the 105theticket.com that talked about that game really being a microcosm of the season. You've got a pitcher that got lit up in the first inning, grand slam from Vogt, his third straight at bat with
good
one,
hitter.
Which is a very good hitter. And that, you know, I mean, this team could have packed it in and gone away. They also could have got the bullpen up in earnest and yanked him right away. They didn't. They said, you know what, you're going to go back out. He did. He found his game. And the Twins responded with four runs an inning later, and then got four more later on. And next thing you know, he picks up a win because he was able to work his way through six innings. What I like about it, Gene, is that he leaves that game feeling good about himself. Yeah. Whereas instead of getting yanked after one because it wasn't working, they allowed him to work through it, and the team responded. And you know, they made three web gems
right
at the end of the game. Dozier diving to his right. That running catch from Hunter in off the foul line I thought was a really nice catch. And then the diving grab by Schaefer in center.
Yeah, from a pitcher's mental perspective too, you know, the last year he had a pitch almost perfect baseball to get a win. He gives up a run or two, it's over. So now he says, okay, I give up a four spot in the first inning and my team came back. Mentally, that helps. That helps me take some pressure off my next start. That I don't got to be so fine. It's a great situation for him.
Well, that next start is today.
Yep, exactly.
So we're going to talk about that much more. On Deck Radio continues. Mike Berardino around the bend. We'll be back right after this. So, Gene, you know, I was a fan the other day, right? This is great.
You're always a fan.
No, but I mean like a real fan in the stands. Mike Berardino.
Did you pay for your ticket?
What?
Did you pay for your
ticket?
No. Well, then you're not a fan.
Well, DiGiulio did. So, DiGiulio got my back. Mike Berardino from the Pioneer Press, TwinCities.com. How are you, buddy?
I'm good. What's going on, guys?
Not much. Hey, I was just telling Gene here that I was a fan in the stand the other day, and I was exposed to Hot Dog Mark. Are you familiar with him?
No, tell me about it.
Okay, this is the guy, you know, he's got a card. He thinks he's Wally the Beer Man now, basically. But he's 6'7", 283, I think were his dimensions. Big fella. And he's got the big floppy red hat that the vendors do. But I've never seen a guy make more of a show out of delivering a hot dog and literally engaging the entire section in what he's doing. It was absolutely a blast. When I'm up there with you, I'll say, there's the guy. And you just got to, I know you're busy working because I watch you. And there's no guy, honestly, Mike, that works harder during a game than you do. You're constantly writing.
Well, that's one word for it. Probably tweeting. what section is this massive Mark in? What section does he work?
Okay, so from where you're looking from behind the plate, if you fan it over down the third baseline on that the lower deck there.
Okay.
You can't miss it.
Yeah, it shouldn't be hard to miss if your description of his
size. No, you can't miss him. And when he like he takes the paper and he flops it around, he just it's a big show. He'll hold the bun up, he'll show you the empty bun. He'll get the dog, he'll drip off the water up in the air so you see him getting it ready, and then he puts it in the bun, then he shows it. He announces if Gene said two hot dogs, he'll go two hot dogs, and then Gene will say, give me ketchup and mustard. He'll go red and yellow, and he'll put that on there. He'll show you what the ketchup and mustard looks like, and it's awesome. So
he's a showman.
He's taken it to another level. He made it really fun. So I told him I'd talk about him because I appreciate it. By the way, Hot Dog Mark is available for your high school graduations.
Is he going to be an advertiser here for the On Deck Radio Show?
You never know. He could be our title sponsor. Brought to you by Hot Dog Mark.
Oh, man.
So, Mike, this team is playing some great baseball, and yesterday they were just lashing the ball all over the park. Your perspective from, you know, this is kind of our theme from today, your perspective from last year to this year.
Well, you know, last year at this time they weren't playing that poorly either. They got to 23-21 by the third week of May.
Correct.
After being out in San Diego and writing the story that they all felt that was sustainable, and then they went to San Francisco, got swept, and they never got back to 500. Where this might be different is, for instance, Irvin Santana is still in dry dock. I mean, they're looking at making a July addition that will rival anything any other team will probably put into their rotation, any other contender, you know, save for, say, Cole Hamels or Scott Kazmir if he gets traded. So they know that's coming. They think they know. So that's pretty good because nobody's sitting around feeling sorry for themselves that this $55 million piece is not available. They're starting to get quality starts at a little more rapid rate. Pelfrey now has three of them. That's really good news that Mike Pelfrey doesn't appear to be a fluke this year. He's not only healthy, he's productive. And then Torrey Hunter is starting to give them turn back the clock nights, basically. there, you know, when he's doing what he did last night and he did in the Oakland series, that's a big boost. I mean, that's pretty interesting stuff.
Mike, how much of a concern, I mean, it's not a concern, but how much of a way of thinking in your mind that the Twins are playing better baseball, but they're also playing teams that are not playing very, very well? Is it more of a situation that they're facing teams at the right time, or do you think they've made that leap now where there can be a competitive team consistently?
Well, that's a good point. I mean, when you say that this is Oakland at about the worst you're going to be, the best time to catch them, the worst they're going to be in a typical year. Cleveland is a huge disappointment. Yeah, I thought Cleveland would be the stealth choice to win that division. I really did. I thought Detroit would come back to the pack in Cleveland. And, of course, Sports Illustrated ruined Cleveland's year by picking them to win it all. Yeah, there's something to that. There's also something to, you know, it's nothing to get too worried about. It's just part of the ebb and flow of the season. But they're missing, I know Corey Kluber's not pitched well, but he's still the Cy Young, defending Cy Young guy, and they're missing him, missing Carlos Carrasco in this series. They just missed Sonny Gray, who's the one guy for Oakland who's still pitching really well in that series, a four-game series. They missed their ace. So that's good because for the first month of the season, they caught everybody's one and two, it seemed like. That was the point Torrey made. He said he couldn't ever remember in his entire career an opening month where you caught everybody's top two guys, and they seemed to do that. Although in Seattle, remember, Iwakuma had to be scratched at the last minute, and he always kills a Twin. So that was kind of a big swing game that Saturday in Seattle because Friday night they couldn't touch Felix, and if they'd had to see Iwakuma the next day, it might have been different because they have never hit him.
So one of the things we heard about was Phil Hughes and the type of quality ones he's gone up against in his first four, maybe five starts. Now he, you know, it looks like Bruce Chen is going to be the man that's put into the rotation. He's been, you know, sharp throughout his career, but he's coming up from AAA, I believe, Columbus at this stage. Could this be one of those starts where if Hughes can pick up where he left off the last couple innings of his effort on Monday, that this could be a good situation for him?
Yeah, I mean, that's just one of the few times this year, probably, he's probably favored in Vegas against Salazar and got outpitched, but I would say typically this year, Phil Hughes is probably the underdog in Vegas, and I would think today he's probably a pretty good favorite despite overall his modest numbers. And even if you look at fielding independent pitching, FIP, as I did at length yesterday on Twitter and bored the heck out of the readership, but sometimes you look to see who's pitching in good luck or in bad luck. Phil's not pitching either way. His 5 ERA is essentially a 5 ERA, so he knows he needs to pick it up, and he knows also that traditionally he's been a slow starter. He's not really much to look at in April, and he wasn't much to look at a year ago in April. You know, the fingernail barks at him and cracks. It happened to multiple Aprils on him now, where it takes away his curveball. But he threw a lot of good curveballs last time out against Oakland, so the fingernail is on his spike curve is cooperating, and that was the pitch that got him going after a really scary first inning on Star Wars night, where he said, I finally get a bobblehead and I'm throwing out a stinker, and but then he pulled it together, and Suzuki just kept putting two down, and Hughes kept flipping in the curve, first pitch curves for strikes. So I would look for more of that. I think that the life on his fastball, as you guys can attest, hasn't really shown up to this point. It's a guy who can touch 93, sometimes 94, and we're seeing a lot of 90s to 91, maybe a little bit of 92. So there's still more in the tank.
So I think I'll start with Gene on this question. Why is it that for some players, whether it's pitching or positionally, it seems like April's a lost month, and you do have spring training, you know, half of February and into March. Why does it seem for real for some of these guys, it seems, and we talked about Torrey Hunter a little bit heating up now, why does it take more time?
I don't think anybody can give a real concrete, honest answer, Wags. I mean, sometimes guys say they can't play in cold weather, but the weather hasn't been that cold this year in the Twins calendar. So I don't know. Some guys have great springs and lousy starts. Some guys have lousy springs and great starts. So it's just a matter of, you know, I do think, and I agree with Mike, if you're facing one and two guys in the rotation,
good luck.
You know, it's a good 0-for-8. A lot of times. So, yeah. You know, you got to live with that, too. And now that they're getting not so many one and twos, but, you know, I think you really can't get a real answer. Sometimes, you know, when I played, I had poor springs and good starts and vice versa. So, you know, it really depends on you. And sometimes it's luck. Sometimes it's a lot of few bloop hits. When you don't have a lot of at-bats, those two or three bloop singles, the average stays up there. Those things get caught, your average looks abysmal. So a little bit of luck involved as well.
You know, Mike, a lot of people, you know, there's been so much talk in this market about Miguel Sano and Byron Buxton to the point where okay, enough already to that degree. And I think
really?
Everybody's moved on. But one of the things that Gene brought up in our first segment was, you know, really impressive how Trevor Plouffe has completely brushed that off, because that's nothing he's ever heard, but those whispers constantly about Sano, Sano, Sano. And all he's done is get better, better, better. And as he said, is, you know, when a ground ball is hit to third base, no longer do you go, what's going to happen here? You know he's going to come on and make the play. From your view, how impressive have you seen that? And do you see him getting even better?
Well, I mean, you look at the improvement arc just in the last couple of years since you got to just camp out at third, and you know, although he is still getting little cameos at first when they want to get Mauer out late in the game. You know, Trevor can all, he played everywhere on the field except catcher and center field in a major league game to this point. So the versatility is nice. He's a good athlete, even though he's put on 15 more pounds of muscle in the last couple of years. He's throwing his body around. He's gotten better, seems to me, side to side. He was always good coming in on balls, and he was always pretty good at a ball hit straight at him. But he's making the diving play in the hole and also to his right, where those ground balls just inside the bag tended to become doubles, and he's now, and I'm not saying he's Brooks Robinson, but he's getting to those balls a little more frequently, and the throwing, his accuracy on the throwing, you're not seeing as many of the bounced throws that you would see just a couple of years ago. He's worked hard. That's a product of hard work. Paul Molitor just raves about him and had a great burst of positives about him in the spring. I think he called it a relentless desire to get better. And if you could just take a relentless desire to get better and put it into all 25 guys every single day, who knows where that would take you. Trevor Plouffe's a good example.
I'll tell you what. You
can't teach effort, right? We say it all the time. Just give the effort, and then we'll see what happens. But if you give it the effort, the manager's going to give you second, third opportunities to show him that, you know, you belong here. And like I said earlier before you were on the air, Mike, I have tremendous respect for that. Because when you hear somebody's name in your ear constantly and you're not playing particularly well, you can go down south real quick. But Trevor Plouffe's done the opposite. Like, worked hard defensively. He's a legit power threat from the right side of the plate, and he really fits in well with the lineup right now.
He has said now for a couple of years he just wants to be a run producer, and last year it manifested itself more in extra base hits and especially, you know, hard contact the other way, and he stays on the ball. He lets the ball travel deeper. He's carried that approach into this year. He and Tom Bernanski have done very good work together to make him a tougher and tougher out. And runners in scoring position used to get in his head, used to have a lot of infield pop-ups in those situations. And now you're seeing whatever it takes, sack fly. You're seeing the ground ball that'll score the runner. You're seeing the loud double. You're seeing, grand slam. So that was his first. So I think it's the trend, the arrow is up, especially, you know, not that Trevor's waking up every day checking the stats down at Chattanooga, but Miguel Sano's not hitting. He's not hitting yet. The rust is still being scraped off for him. The rust that Buxton needed 3 weeks to scrape off, Sano might need six. He's also making errors. He's got six errors in about 22 games at third base. He's got a couple of games at DH. That raises the whole question of, is he going to be ready to play a major league quality third base when he gets here? So the fans who might have come to Twins Fest or gone to spring training dreaming of seeing Sano up here by June 1st, we're a week into May, and he's still scuffling. So I don't think that's happening. I think Trevor Plouffe's putting down some roots here, and we're not even sure that Sano will be a third baseman when he gets here. The Twins still want to develop him that way, but there might be some creativity needed to find that spot. Obviously, the bat, when it continues and rediscovers itself here this spring, this season, they'll find a place for that bat, but it may not be third base.
Ironically, the pressure now is on Miguel Sano. I mean, that's the part that stands out to me. Mike, we got to take a break. Great stuff as always. We appreciate your being with us here, and hopefully we can talk to you next week.
Thank you, Mike.
That sounds great. Have a great show, guys. Thanks.
You too. Thanks. Mike Berardino, St. Paul Pioneer Press, TwinCities.com. 5 questions with Gene Larkin coming up right after this on Deck Radio. Welcome back to the On Deck Radio Show. Gene Larkin in studio. Al Newman on, what is he, CHS Field? Or do they go off-site because they don't want to wreck the...
No, I think they're at CHS.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's a beautiful park. Have you been there yet?
No, I want to go.
It's fabulous. I watched
Are you looking
St.
at
John's
the river?
Play Hamlin in doubleheader a few weeks back. It's right by Farmer's Market down there. It is beautiful. Really nice job.
St. John's, by the way, is in postseason play right now at Veterans Field in Minnetonka,
yeah,
correct?
Yeah, the four-team playoff. Last night was the kickoff, and Bethel lost to St. Thomas. Bethel was ranked number one going into the
Shocker
playoffs.
There, yeah.
St. Thomas beat them, and then in a tough game for the Johnnies, they lost in 11 innings, 9-8, I believe. So right now as we speak, Bethel is playing St. John's. The loser is out. The winner maintains position.
So it's a double elimination.
Double elimination.
And then from here, do you go to Nationals?
Regionals. Yeah,
regionals?
I don't know exactly where regionals are. But
but that's it then for D3, or do they continue?
I don't know.
If it's an NCAA event, we're going to say you're going all the way down. You're going to the Division III World Series on ESPN 10, or whatever their next channel is. Yeah, absolutely.
Dick Bramer, yeah, Pete Wagner.
Yeah. Along with Dick Bramer, I'm Pete Wagner. Hi again, everybody. Oh, God. You know, there's nothing better than baseball, though, calling play-by-play, because all you can do is just talk.
Well, you know, I did a little analysis
of our analysts.
Yeah, but, a while back, it's not that easy of a job when you analyze the game. And I'll tell you the best, guys, when you can say the same thing in a different way consistently. Those are the guys that are good, because there's a lot of repeat performance in a game, you know, especially when you try to analyze a pitcher. But those guys, and Bert does a nice job, he says the same thing in a different way, and it's entertaining, you know? And I always thought Tom Kelly, when he was up there in the booth, he was terrific. I know he was a little bit dry for some people.
I loved him.
But I loved the way he analyzed the game. It was unbelievable. And I had the privilege of being on the bench while he was managing.
Do you know what he did to that point? When Tom Kelly would analyze a game, he would do it from the perspective of him being on the top step of that dugout as the manager. And get past the kind of, I don't know, monotone TK deal, whatever, who cares. If you really listen to I thought it was terrific. I have friends that go, but no, to me, I think he's teaching
the game the fan.
I loved his term, diamond cutter. Yeah, but he'd also bring out things like that, or he'd refer to Joe Mauer as Joseph.
Right.
You know, just stuff like that.
Little
just
things that made you smile.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, but you know.
I loved him. I just loved him talking
about
it.
It is really good. Yeah. Here's another interesting thing is when they bring in Roy Smalley when Bert takes time off, boy, that guy gets more vacation days than he works. I mean, how do you get that job?
Roy does a good job, too. I enjoy listening to Roy.
That was my point. What I like about getting Roy Smalley is we get the pitcher's perspective.
Correct.
A lot. But then now you get Roy's perspective of saying, this is how they're trying to get you out, and this is what you got to do. And I think he does a nice job of doing that.
He's a great job. He's an intellectual guy, number one, but he talks at a level that everybody can understand. And obviously a guy who's played at a high level of the game and had I didn't realize how good of successful career Roy had. Even when I played for him that 1 year, I look at his baseball card. He had a terrific career.
79 was
terrific
massive.
Career. He's very good at what he does too.
The worst thing that happened to him is he got dealt to New York.
Yeah.
Because
he had some good years with the Yankees as well.
He did, but he was in that window of the Yankees from 82 on where you were like, traded here?
I was a fan. I was a fan.
You were one of few in the building, right? I mean, that was people forget that was an organization where it was rugged for a long time. I mean, 15 years? Would you say 82 to about 97?
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, they started getting better after the lockout or whatever it was, but from there on. Let's get on to five questions now. I've got question number one. What is Gene Larkin, your impression of the bullpen use so far? And what I'm going to say is this. You mentioned earlier in segment one about Glenn Perkins coming in to pitch one out in the eighth and come back out the ninth. You bring in Aaron Thompson, not just to pitch one inning and have him pigeonholed into that, but instead you're going to say, you know what, you're going to pitch a second and maybe even start a third. I mean, there were strict roles with Gardy. It's changed under Molitor.
Well, I mean, I'm not going to criticize anything Gardy did.
Not doing that at all.
No, I'm not. Just the way Paul has managed the team is a little bit different, and I appreciate it. I mean, I told you a little bit in the first segment that I can never understand why a closer is limited to three outs, the last three outs of the game. When the eighth inning, it might be the biggest out of the game, and in the ninth inning, might be you're facing your seventh, eighth, ninth hitters,
and you're lefty, and they're all lefties.
Yeah, so I don't quite get it. And Thompson's been a terrific find. I mean, his saga has been well chronicled in the media about his situation. He's come in and got righties and lefties out, and it's been great to see. You know, unfortunately, Tim Stauffer hasn't worked out, and when he went on DL, it seems like this bullpen started to be a little bit more consistent too.
Well, that variable with his injury and his lack of productivity gave these guys more opportunity too.
Right, and you know, you got your Presley guy up here, Tonkin's throwing the ball very, very well, so everybody's got a role, but. You know, the bullpen works because the starting pitching works, too. When you don't have to come in the fourth or third inning and you can, you know, get your starter to go five, six, seven innings, which they've done in the last few weeks, your bullpen looks a lot better.
This bullpen does not have a designated long reliever.
Right.
Does that present a problem?
No, I think the J.R. Graham thing, you know, the Rule 5 guy, they tried to give him some innings early on and didn't work. They kind of buried him a little bit.
He's not bad.
They pick their spots now as they should with the young guy. So they don't have a designated guy who's going to go four or five innings. But they've gradually put him back in now. They're giving him an inning or two to try to get his confidence back. So to me, it's not a big deal to have a designated long guy. You don't want a designated long guy. So it is what it is.
So by and large, your opinion of the bullpen use from this staff has been pretty good.
I love it. I just love it.
I agree with you on that. Okay. Eddie Rosario called up, and he was called up over Aaron Hicks, who had better numbers than he did at AAA. Does this mean that Hicks is buried, or does it just mean we're going to give this guy a shot and you keep working?
No, I don't think they're burying Hicks, but I do think they want Hicks to show them that he can maintain some consistency over a long period of time. And they've been bringing him up, and then whether he does well or not, then sending him down. It's like, it's not good for anybody. It's not good for the organization. It's not good for Aaron Hicks. He's had his legitimate opportunities the last 2 years. It didn't work out for him. Give him more time in AAA to get better, to get more confident, to get more consistent. Rosario is playing fine. Maybe the numbers weren't as good as Hicks, but give him a shot. And I mean, you can't live it out better, can you? First pitch in the major leagues, driving the ball.
Did you see all the phones?
Yeah, it was fun to watch. And the thing is going to be now, you know, when you got Arcia and Nunez on the DL, and they haven't swung a bat yet. They're not quite ready to do the baseball skill work. But when they come back, is it going to be right away Rosario gets sent down so he can play every day? Or is Paul going to give him more of an opportunity to play every day in the big leagues? And if he does well, then you've got another decision to make. Does it affect Schaefer? Does it affect Arcia? You know, we talked about Trevor Plouffe stepping up and doing a job. Well, Arcia has not played a very good outfield. And, you know, we've talked about in the first week of the season reason why they were playing poorly. Outfield play was terrible. Arcia wasn't very good. You know, he got a little bit better before he went on a DL, but you want to see more consistency defensively. We got Arcia because he can jack the ball out of right center field. We got it. But you got to be able to play the outfield for Paul Molitor. And if Rosario plays well and plays a good defense, what does that happen with Arcia? Is he a definite, where we're going to bring him back, he's going to be our starter, main starter? Or does Rosario get more at-bats?
Don't you think if you're a defensive replacement in the outfield, right, you're going to get yanked. And if you're hitting only okay situation, your stock has got to be lowering a little bit. You know, I mean, I know there's a...
He's very young still. You always use that.
But there's the fear, right, of the go-go, the Gomez, give up on the guy too soon. I know
Absolutely.
He was a flake, but the fact is there a fear that you could give up on Arcia too soon?
Yes, because this team lacks power. We all
Correct.
Know that. You know, so here's a legitimate power threat, especially against a right-handed pitcher. Lefties, he really does struggle, you know, especially with good breaking balls, which most lefties do. Let's you know, tell it like it is here. But he's a legitimate power threat from all sides of the field. So it'll be tough at his age to give up, especially since you've talked about the history of giving up on certain people who had phenomenal careers.
Almost MVP-like years here and there. Yeah, that's a tough thing to do.
But Rosario's off to a very good start. Let's see how it goes.
Well, it's been a good, you know, what, four RBIs in his early going here. We're gonna come back. We've asked two of the five questions. These are deep.
Dude.
I can't wait to get to number five.
That's great questions, Wes.
Number five. Well, thank you.
To pay you the big bucks here.
Boy, that was full-fledged laughter there on that one. We'll be back with more On Deck Radio on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket. Your Minnesota Twins theme song ripped straight off from the 2005 Chicago White Sox. From On Deck Radio to you, we can't stop believing. I'm not going to stop believing in this team.
Why?
Why? Oh, they've
got. Of course not.
They're a wild card. Are they top wild card?
It's fun to watch.
Are they the top wild card team right now?
You turn the TV on. It's fun to watch. It's a great for fans, great for former players to watch because, you know, no one likes to see what has happened, transpired over the last 3 or 4 years. And this is a team that made big changes, both on in the dugout and from a player personnel this year, changed things around. Just enjoy what's going on. Like I said all the time, it's a season of 162. You got to grind out. You're going to face. They're going to run into some bad weeks, guaranteed. But if they can minimize those bad weeks and stay competitive, we're looking for a 500 team. That's our ultimate goal right now. And who knows what's going to happen with the rest of the league.
Step.
Will a 500 team vie for a wild card spot?
Maybe.
The Central Division to me now is a little bit overrated. We look at the two bottom teams, the White Sox and Cleveland. They're terrible. Right now, they are terrible teams. So,
I mean, they're terrible because they're not catching the ball and they're not pitching.
Kansas City's a team that I think is good enough and young enough and have a little history from last year's playoff.
What about that staff?
They can go on a run.
But what about that starting staff? Shields is gone. I think that's a big deal.
I think
Billy Butler's a big deal, too.
I've always liked Billy Butler. I was surprised.
He's a
glue guy. I thought he was going to be a long-term tenure guy at the Royals. But so we'll see.
Who knows?
Enjoy,
the way the A's go.
Enjoy it, fans. Enjoy it.
The way your boy Billy Bean goes, the fact is that Butler will probably
–
what did he –
holy.
That's what we were talking about on Monday night up in the press box. I'm looking at this roster.
Who are these guys?
What happened here? Was this a money thing or was him just saying – was that him just saying, you know what, we're blowing this thing up because we've been close but not – it's kind of the whole wild discussion we had a couple of hours ago. Yeah. Is he going down that road, you think?
He must have, because everybody who had any name to him got, you know, sent out by Trader, and they got young guys in return, and so, but, you know.
It didn't make any sense to me. So
we'll
Butler
see.
Might be
he's had a great
back.
Track record, so, you know, who's to say that he's a nut?
He's pretty good at what he does. He's very good at what he does, and he's pulled rabbits out of the hat many times there in that market. But what I'm saying is don't rule out Billy Butler being returned back to his former employer with the way he does things. He just never knows. So then he'll get some more parts out of that.
Who would have thought that the Houston Astros, who I still can't, digest that they're an American League team.
That's hard to do.
Yeah.
It's really hard to do. Not only an American League team, but in the division on the West Coast.
Correct.
Being right down
the
midsection.
They play phenomenal baseball.
Okay, so to that point.
Who's on the Houston Astros?
I don't know.
Altuve.
Do they still
have? He's the guy I can, you know? Seriously.
I mean, but yeah. And
they got that stud pitcher Kuchel, but, you know, other than that, who's on the
Astros? Chris Carter can hit the ball.
He can. But I look at him as a great DH in the American League, but, you know, he's got to play a position. And they're
fortunately, they're an American League
they're
team.
They're off to a great start. But again, it's a small.
You were on a team that went from worst to first, and so were the Braves. Yeah. Two teams did that in 1 year, and they played for the World Series. Here come the Houston Astros. And, you know, I don't want to say here come the Twins. It's a little too soon, obviously, and there a lot has to happen. And, of course, we're always guardedly optimistic here in the great state of Minnesota. But what happens there where a team can be on the bottom of the barrel and flip it? And it happens often in baseball.
Well, guys have better years. They, you know, for whatever reason, guys have better years at the right time together. It's not one guy stepping up. It's 8 or 9 guys being better that particular year. And then the competition might do the opposite. Their stud guys might have average years or their pitching staff might get hurt. So a lot of things can happen. It's very early, 30 games into the season. It's a great situation now that we can talk in a positive manner. In the first week of the season, we were doing the show, go, whoa, 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 what's going on here? Is this going to be as bad as it looks?
Can you imagine what the following 4 months would have sounded like on the show? It would have been just an absolute nightmare.
And you're the ultimate optimist.
I know, but when
and
I
I'm
get,
the realist but, of this group.
I know, you kind of are. And the great part, and Newman kind of fits the, he's sort of
he's
between
the
two
of
us.
He's in the middle. You know? I'm a New York guy. I'm going to tell it like it is.
But it's pretty
funny. You're the Midwest, and here we go.
But what people don't know off the air is how vile you are, actually.
There are certain guys that bother me watching them play. Like, and I think the effort is always there, but And then their comments after the game bothered me a little bit. Like, okay, where is that coming from? You're a big league player.
And you've been in this league for how long?
Yeah,
and,
I'm not going to mention names yet. We'll give him a few more weeks.
All you have to have done is, if you read the paper or the story online today from Twins yesterday's game and you don't know what we're talking about right now, then just stop reading. It's just one of those things. Let me get you a couple more of these questions. Right. You know, winning, it plays into this Houston Astros going for just lighting it up right now. The Twins doing a great job. Worst of first scenarios that we've seen throughout the years. But really, how contagious is winning to all aspects of every position? But more importantly, when you have a team with a lot of young players, how hard is that to sustain on one end? And then on the other end, is that easier to have happen because they're more impressionable?
I think the problem lies in that you might have too many high highs and too many low lows when you're young. And that's when you need a veteran coaching staff like a Paul Mott or Tom Bernanski. He's played forever. He's coached forever now. To tone it down a little bit when things are going good. I know they have the dance machine, the smoke, and I think that's
the
great.
The laser light show?
I think that is really great, especially from where you've come from the last 4 years, to change up the vibe in the locker room. I think that's terrific. But there's also an inclination as how much is too much when things are going very, very good to get too happy. So when things go south a little bit, as it will, I will guarantee this team will go into a funk again. It has to happen because it's just baseball. But when they go into that funk, how long does it take them to get out of that funk? Does it take one or two guys or is there a collective unit to get them out of that funk? And we say it all the time. It becomes very cliche when you talk about the game. It always comes down to starting pitching. When that's consistent, you usually have a very consistent season. When that's sporadic and you got your ups and downs, it's going to be tough to be consistent as a winning team, and that's just a fact.
Speaking of starting pitching, that's really something when Terry Ryan came back into the fold as general manager and he took over for Billy Smith that he addressed and has tried to work on and adding components. And Kyle Gibson was a draft pick from this team. He was Missouri, right? University of Missouri?
Yes.
Our sample size on him for one full season was last year, a little bit of the season before, but I thought last year was great. And he was a couple wins away from maybe being a 16-game winner there. And he's 2-2 this year, but he's been so effective, really keeping the ball down and pitching well. Is our sample size big enough to say this guy's the real deal?
I think he's turned the corner. Whether it's a big enough sample size, I don't know. But he's shown me a lot. And what I like about pitching, younger pitchers, when they don't have their best stuff, they grind it out, Wags. They don't, you know, five and dive type of guy. He wants the ball. He wants to be in that game in the seventh inning before he gives it to Perkins. He's keeping the ball down. His breaking balls are down. He's not striking out a lot of guys. He's more of a pitch to contact, which we've, you know, made fun of a little bit. But in a good way, he battles the hitters. You can tell that he has a good plan with Suzuki every time he's on the mound, and he tries to fulfill that plan. I'm very impressed. And I think he has turned the corner. Whether he wins 16 or 17 this year, I don't know. That's depending on his offense a little bit, too. But he's going to be a consistent big league pitcher now. I'm really, really confident in that.
It certainly looks like that. And then you're hearing so much about the other players. Taylor, I can't think of his last name, in AAA. There's another one coming along there. Well, and then
you talk about creating depth, right?
Yeah.
In the rotation, guys who would be called up. I know Tommy Malone got sent down. He had a good start the other night. You're trying to create depth. Trevor May, Alex Myers down there. Berrios, is in AA, another good arm. So
he's pitching
you're
well.
You're trying to create depth in the rotation just in case something screwed up like had happened this year with Santana. And Berardino brought a great point up. You know, he's going to be coming back in July. If this team stays in the hunt, and you've got a very good big league pitcher coming in July, just like a free agent acquisition, so that would be a huge deal. I mean, we're talking so far out in front now, but, want to create depth at every position. Terry Ryan's tried to create that in the staff.
Well, and then what do you get when you get depth? You get competition.
Yes.
And guys like Trevor Plouffe, who have said, I'm going to step up and take this. Somebody is going to be the man and compete in that regard.
Yeah, the worst thing you could do in the front office is have a guy say, well, I'm going to be the player because there's no one else.
You have
that
no
can
choice.
Compete. And that leads to complacency. That's human nature. The Twins don't have that. They shouldn't because of their record the last few years. But they also got guys in AA and AAA that have done a nice job to help think about this is a potential replacement if the guy in the big league doesn't do the job. Wow.
Fifth question. Wow. Here's a good one. You're going to love this one. This is a fun one. Bryce Harper, all these guys with the college face paint and all this crap they have. If that was in your league when you were playing, what would happen to guys like that? You're not playing college.
Well,
what is this
but
look?
You know what? Bryce Harper, he got
Oakland A's, their whole middle infield.
He got dinged when he first got called up. I know he's had a lot of negative talk about him, but he plays the game hard. He really does. I'm not big on his facial makeup
honestly, anybody in your era, would happen on your team if a guy comes out and he looks like he's playing lacrosse?
Well,
you're not playing college baseball
and
lacrosse.
I don't think Tom Kelly would say, okay, young man, turn around.
he, though?
I think he would. I mean, I can't speak for Tom, but I think he said, this is not how we're going to dress ourselves. We're going to handle ourselves being professional. Correct.
It's not about you.
Don't disrespect the game. In a certain way, that kind of disrespects.
That's why I'm asking it. Because I noticed that a couple of the Oakland guys were doing that. And, you know, so you see Harper do it now. You know, I really feel like I'm watching the College World Series when I was... I checked. I thought I was at a Major League Baseball game.
They turn their hat in a certain way for a streak, you know, get hot.
Or how about you wear the flat, Bill?
Yeah, exactly.
I know you love that. You've got, what, two more tryouts left for the Edina American Legion baseball
team? I do. This Sunday, tomorrow, and the following Sunday before I make my call.
Ooh. The pressure.
It's the hardest thing a coach can do.
There's nothing worse than telling a player
that he's not ready for it yet.
That's the toughest thing, no question. Gene, great show. Thank you.
Thank you, Wax.
Newmy's going to join us back in the studio next week. David Helmer pulling the buttons. We'll be back on the air 11 o'clock next week. Have a great week. So long, everybody.